The Hidden Life of Trees, Chapter 25, The Sick Tree. Statistically speaking, most species of trees can live to a ripe old age. In the burial area of the forest I manage, tree buyers always ask how long their tree might live. Mostly, they choose beeches or oaks, and as far as we know, these trees usually live to between 400 and 500 years old. But what is a statistic worth when you apply it to an individual tree? Just as much as it is worth when you apply it to an individual person. Nothing. The anticipated trajectory of a tree's life can change at any time for any number of reasons. Its health depends on the stability of the forest ecosystem. It's better if temperature, moisture, and light conditions don't change abruptly, because trees react extremely slowly. But even when all the external conditions are optimal, insects, fungi, bacteria, and viruses are always lurking, waiting for the chance to strike. That usually happens only when a tree gets out of balance. Under normal circumstances, a tree carefully apportions its energy. The largest portion is used for daily living. The tree has to breathe, digest its food, supply its fungal allies with sugar, and grow a bit every day. Then the tree has to keep hidden reserves of energy on hand to fight off pests. These secret reserves can be activated at any time, and depending on the tree species, they contain a selection of defensive compounds produced by the tree. These so-called phytoncides have antibiotic properties, and there has been some impressive research done on them. A biologist from Leningrad, Boris Tokin, described them like this back in 1956. If you add a pinch of crushed spruce or pine needles to a drop of water that contains protozoa, in less than a second, the protozoa are dead. In the same paper, Tokin writes that the air in young pine forests is almost germ-free, thanks to the phytoncides released by the needles. In essence, then, trees disinfect their surroundings. But that isn't all. Walnuts have compounds in their leaves that deal so effectively with insects that garden lovers are often advised to put a bench under a canopy of walnuts if they want a comfortable place to relax in the garden, because this is where they will have the least chance of being bitten by mosquitoes. The phytoncides in the conifers are particularly pungent, and they are the origin of the heady forest scent that is especially intense on hot summer days. If the carefully calibrated balance of energy for growth and defence gets thrown out of alignment, then a tree might get sick. This can happen, for example, when a neighbouring tree dies. Suddenly, the crown gets more light, and now what the tree wants more than anything is more photosynthesis. That makes sense, because a chance like this comes along only about once every 100 years. The tree, finding itself suddenly bathed in sunlight, forgets about everything else and focuses exclusively on growing branches. It has no option, really, because its surrounding cohort is doing the same thing, which means that the gap in the canopy will close again in about 20 years, which, if you are a tree, means you don't have much time. Suddenly, growth speeds up, and instead of adding a few fractions of an inch each year, the tree is adding about 20 inches. This takes energy, which is then not available for fending off illnesses and pests. If the tree is lucky, all goes well, and once the canopy closes again, the tree will have increased the size of its crown. Then it will take a break and settle back into apportioning its energy in a way that suits its lifestyle. But woe betide the tree if something goes wrong during this growth spurt. A fungus might attack the stub left by a fallen branch and, unnoticed, make its way along the dead wood and into the trunk. Or a bark beetle might take an exploratory bite out of a tree, busy reaching for the light, and discover there is no defensive response. Then the game is up. The trunk, which appears to be in the very best of health, finds itself increasingly under attack because it doesn't have the energy to mobilize a defense. The first reactions to the attacks soon show up in a treetop. In deciduous trees, the vital topmost growth suddenly dies, leaving thick branch stubs with no side branches sticking up into the sky. The initial reaction of conifers is that their needles don't last as long. Sick pines, for instance, retain not three, but maybe only one or two generations of needles on their branches, which makes their crowns noticeably more open. In spruce, you also get what is known in Germany as the lametta effect, where the twigs hang limply from the branches. Lametta is another name for the tinsel that is draped over the branches of a Christmas tree. A short time later, big flakes of bark break off the trunk. Things can deteriorate quite quickly from this point. Like a deflating hot air balloon, the crown implodes and sinks as it dies, and winter storms break off the dead branches. You can see this even more clearly with spruce, because the desiccated tips of dying trees contrast clearly with the living green of the lower branches. Every year, a live tree adds a growth ring to it, to the wood in its trunk, because it is, you could say, damned to grow whether it wants or not. In the growing season, the cambium, that narrow layer of clear cells between the bark and the wood, grows new woody cells on the inside and new bark cells on the outside. If a tree cannot increase its girth, it dies. At least, that is what we thought for a long time. Then researchers noticed pines in Switzerland that looked outwardly healthy and were covered in green needles. On closer inspection, either by cutting the trees down or taking core samples, researchers discovered that a few of them hadn't created a single new growth ring for more than 30 years. Dead pines covered in green needles. The trees had been attacked by an aggressive fungus called Anosis root rot, and their cambium had died. But the roots were still pumping water up to the crown through the long, narrow transport vessels in the trunk, providing the needles with life-giving moisture. And the roots themselves? When the cambium is dead, the bark is too, which means the tree can no longer pump sugar solutions from its needles back down to its roots. Therefore, healthy neighbouring pines must have been helping their dying comrades by supplying their roots with food, as I've described in Chapter 1, Friendships. Apart from diseases, a lot of trees suffer injuries over the course of their lives. There are many different ways this can happen. A neighbouring tree might fall. In a dense forest, a falling tree cannot avoid hitting a few surrounding comrades. If this happens in winter, when the tree's relatively dry bark fits tightly around their wood, not much happens. Most often, only a few branches break, leaving no visible signs of damage after just a few years. Injuries to the trunk are more serious, and these usually happen during the summer months. This is when the cambium is full of water, crystal clear, and slippery. At this time, it doesn't take much pressure to loosen the outer layer of the tree, and branches from a falling neighbour scraping by can rip yard-long wounds in the tree's trunk. The damp wound is an ideal landing site for fungal spores, which arrive just minutes later. They grow fungal threads that immediately begin making a meal of the wood and the tree's food supplies. They don't make much progress. There's simply too much water in the wood. Although fungi like it moist, soaking wet conditions spell death for them. At first, their victory march into the interior of the trunk is slowed by the wet outer wood where the sap is flowing. However, the sapwood is now exposed to the air, and its outer layers can dry out. A slow-motion struggle begins. The fungus advances as the sapwood loses its moisture, while the tree tries to close up the wound. To do this, the tissues around the injury really get going and start growing together as fast as they can. They can cover up to a third of an inch of injured wood per year. To avoid complications in the future, the tree must get the area sealed once again within 5 years, tops. Once new bark has closed the old wound, the tree can saturate the damaged sapwood from the inside and kill the fungus. However, if the fungus has made it from the sapwood into the heartwood, the older wood beneath the sapwood that no longer transports water or stores energy reserves, then it's too late. The decommissioned wood is drier and, therefore, ideal for the attacker, and the tree can't mount any defences here. So, the decisive factor in whether the tree has a chance is the size of the wound. Anything much more than an inch is life-threatening. But even if the fungus wins and makes itself at home inside the tree, all is not yet lost. True, the fungus can get stuck into the wood without further hindrance, but it takes its time. A whole century can pass before everything has been consumed and turned to mush. Even this won't make the tree the slightest bit less stable, because the fungus cannot expand into the wet outer growth rings of the living sapwood. In extreme cases, the tree gets hollowed out like a stovepipe, and just like a pipe, the tree remains stable. So we shouldn't feel sorry for a rotten tree, and it doesn't necessarily feel pain either, because the heartwood is no longer active and usually no longer contains any living cells. The outer growth rings, which are still active, transport water up the trunk and therefore are much too wet for the fungi. If a tree has successfully walled off, that is to say, closed up, an injury to its trunk, then it can usually grow as old as its uninjured companions. But sometimes, especially in cold winters, the old wounds can act up again. Then a crack like a rifle shot echoes through the forest and the trunk splits open along the old injury. This is caused by differences in tension in the frozen wood, because the wood in trees with a history of injury varies greatly in density.